Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Every day we report on COVID-19 cases and deaths across the country. But do these numbers really give a true view of how widespread this virus is? California recently reported massive errors, as many as 300,000 test results never put into a database. Officials now say that glitch is fixed, but it still points to problems in how we're tracking the virus. Dr. Tom Frieden is former director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. His nonprofit group is Resolve to Save Lives. And Dr. Frieden is on Skype. Welcome.
Great to speak with you, Tanya.
Yes, so Dr. Frieden, the New York Times reports today that across the country, 200,000 more people have died than normal. That's since March. If these people have indeed died from COVID-19-related illnesses, we still are not certain of that. That would actually mean that 60,000 more people have died than official statistics tell us. Do you think we're underestimating the death toll from COVID? And what risk does an underestimation of cases and deaths mean in our efforts to contain this virus?
Well, first, to put this into context, reported COVID deaths are already the third leading cause of death in the United States for 2020. They follow only heart disease and cancer as causes of death. In terms of the total numbers of deaths, this is something we look at with a term called excess mortality. And excess mortality consists of three different groups. One, reported COVID deaths. The second, people who died from COVID, but whose diagnosis was not made or reported. And the third group are people who died because of COVID, but not because of the infection, but rather because of the disruption that COVID caused in healthcare, particularly heart attacks.
Are you concerned, though, about these data glitches in particular and what that could mean for what we know regarding the number? Does that change our view of risk overall?
Well, on the one hand, I agree with the analysis that there are undoubtedly more deaths from COVID and also deaths associated with COVID than have been reported. The broader issue for me is that we need to do much better in understanding our risk, our response, and the enemy. The enemy here is the virus, and that enemy, the virus, really preys on any fault lines in society, whether those fault lines are partisan politics or suspicion of government, or meatpacking factories, or the way we care for our elderly in nursing homes, or racial injustice. And where there are fault lines, the virus spreads. One way we can get ahead of it is to get much better information. And that's why our group, Resolve to Save Lives, has advocated for 15 essential indicators, measures of where the virus is and how we're doing to attack it, that should be reported at least weekly from every state and every county. But without that kind of information, we risk getting further and further behind.
Do you see us moving in that direction based on the work that you're doing with your organization?
I see lots of signs of progress and hope. I see public health and healthcare professionals working really hard around the country, but we're still a long way from where we need to be. If we just take two of the essential components of a response, rapid testing and rapid isolation, we're flying blind. Right now, hundreds of thousands of laboratory tests every day are being done with turnaround times of 5, 7, 10, 14 days. That's a colossal waste of money. And when it comes to isolation and warning contacts, there are only a few places around the country reporting how they're doing with that, and mostly we need to do a lot better. Our organization works in nearly 100 countries around the world, and the U.S., frankly, is a laggard. We see countries like Senegal, Uganda, Ethiopia, not to mention Iceland, Singapore, Hong Kong, and elsewhere, reporting and acting on this essential information so they can keep COVID down. Broadly speaking, there are two things we have to do. The first is to increase distance and safety, and that includes the three W's: wear a mask correctly, wash your hands, and watch your distance. It includes closures of bars and indoor dining when COVID is spreading widely. And on the other hand, we need to do better boxing the virus in with quick strategic testing, rapid and effective isolation, complete contact tracing, and supportive quarantine. That's how we keep cases from becoming clusters and clusters from spreading widely and forcing us to shut down again.
So with that protocol, masks and distance, I mean, this week and next week and the next few weeks, really, schools are reopening and some schools are reopening in person. We know today we've learned that more than 2,000 students and teachers and staff across 5 states have had to quarantine now that they've met in person. That's according to CNN. What is your reaction to what you're seeing there? You mentioned bars as a place of spread, but should districts planning to reopen for in-person learning, like New York City, for instance, be pivoting now?
Any community can open schools, but only a community that does 2 things right can keep them open safely. The first is to control COVID in the community. If COVID is spreading widely, there is no way the school can open safely. It's going to have to shut again. And so the first thing a community has to do is to control COVID. The second is to adapt in the schools. And there's lots that needs to be done to reduce risk, to protect the most vulnerable, and to prepare for the inevitability that there will be cases and exposures and how to limit that so it minimizes the harm. But it's absolutely the case that there are also big harms to keeping kids out of school. Distance learning isn't working for all. It's not equivalent, particularly for younger kids, particularly for kids who don't have easy access to broadband or informatics. It is actually leading to even larger educational disparities than already existed. So we all agree we want the kids back in school learning, but that can only be done if we all work together, stay apart, get COVID down in our community, and adapt our schools to the new reality of COVID.
Elsewhere in the program, we're talking to Dr. Michael Osterholm. He's a leading infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota. And he says we need a 6-week shutdown right now to save lives and the economy. Do you agree with this idea?
I don't. I think we need to be much more granular in how we take action. And if you look at the shutdown over the spring, it was too soon, too long in too many places. And because of that, you have enormous resentment from people, quite understandably, who had to curtail a lot of their activities when there was virtually no or no COVID in their community. What makes much more sense is to get eyes on the virus, to figure out where it's spreading, and then to take action in those places to keep it down. That kind of targeted approach is going to be much more effective and sustainable, and I think much more acceptable for people to adhere to.
But doctor, part of the criticism that many people have about the response to COVID-19 is that there is no federal guideline. And so every state, every city, every municipality is doing something different based on what they're experiencing. But it has caused havoc in a way that no one really has a clear message on how to mitigate what we're seeing. How would you advise federal intervention, if at all, as part of this? You've mentioned how you'd like to see states take on this problem.
We absolutely need a much more organized federal response. It's really stunning that more than 6 months into this pandemic, we have no clear plan, no clear national communications, no clear line of command. I hope the federal government will do those things. Short of that, at least we should get the kind of information that we all deserve about what's going on in our state and in our community. And with that, we can take more specific action to tamp down the virus and keep it down. There's no one solution to this virus, not masks, not staying home, not testing, not contact tracing, and not treatment, not even a vaccine. We need to chip away at the risk. We need to do all of those things and more, and we need to continuously learn how and where the virus is spreading so we can reduce the risk and how we can most effectively support individuals, communities, and protect our healthcare workers and healthcare system.
That's Dr. Tom Frieden. He's a former director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Frieden, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.